It is the Raleigh James Show. Friday night, the time is right for music trivia. None of the hits all of the time. Non-musical trivia, too, and we'll get back to that next hour. But as for the first hour, as has become tradition, someone from radio and or records back in the day, and when we were compiling the list of who we wanted on Friday nights, at the top of my list was Ruth Meyer, for a variety of reasons. Firstly, for really being a pioneer as far as women getting into a role as program director, but more to the point, regardless of gender, for being, without a doubt, the best top 40 radio station in America at the time she was programming it, and clearly the best top 40 radio station in New York City. And in fact, when you look at just the areas where the signal of WMCA covered, as well as WABC, there was no match. Ruth won every time. It's as simple as that. So, Ruth, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Wow, you're making me so lonesome to be back in radio, and you've said everything I have to say, so goodbye.
It's been nice. Yeah, I've got a lot of questions, and of course, you know, we've talked so much, but there are things, obviously, I've just never asked that I've always wondered, and I figured this would be a great time to do it.
Okay.
Now, firstly, and this is really putting you on the spot, but you've heard before that you have programmed the greatest top 40 station in America, and your ratings, as I say, bear it out that in the city you defeated WABC just about every time.
Right.
How'd you do it?
I just had a terrific air staff.
How'd you pick them?
Well, it sort of happened to me.
Okay, so let's go back. Now, you had been in Kansas City, and when did you come to New York?
Let's see, about, I would say it was probably around 1958.
Okay. And you had been at the stores before, right?
That's right. Todd Stores had put together his top 40 radio station there and taught me all that magical stuff about top 40. And so that's how I learned it. And that's where I started.
Which is interesting, because I'm a Stores alum, too, from Miami, from WQAM, and the only thing I remember much about Todd is saying that a woman should never be past the reception desk. So how were you the exception? Obviously, he saw something.
Well, I don't know. I guess because I was goofy. See, I wasn't program director then. I just, you know, like wrote commercials and did production and things like that. And I think I was always asking him questions. And he kind of got intrigued. And in fact, I kind of got bored. I'd gone as far as I could go in Kansas City, and I wanted to move out of town and get away from my family, you know, be my person.
Yeah.
And so I applied for a job at his New Orleans station.
No, WTIX, sure.
Yeah. And so he called me into his office and said that he would transfer me if I wanted to be transferred, but he said it was really a dumb career move because he couldn't pay me as much as I was making, and it was a smaller market, and that I should just hang out and something better will happen to me. So I took his advice, and I had been taking his advice all along for years and years.
Yeah, and it certainly panned out. So here it was, going from WHB, World's Happiest Broadcasters, where I guess you and I were pretty much doing the same thing when I was writing copy at QAM. But
yeah. But
you somehow managed to convince someone in New York City to hire you as a program director. What did you do?
I didn't want to go to New York.
Oh no! Where'd you want to go?
I think that's kind of the secret.
Maybe.
Well, one of our top disc jockeys, the guy that was doing the top 40 show and all of that in Kansas City, was Peter Tripp.
Oh, sure, the curly haired kid in the third row.
That's right, and so he got to go to New York, and he was working for what was then WMGM.
Sure,
and he was apparently getting so frustrated because nobody there understood the top 40 concept, and it was driving him crazy. And so he had talked them into hiring me, except that I didn't want to go to New York. And so they kept making me offers, and I kept saying no because I didn't want to live in New York.
Right.
And so finally, after the third offer, I decided that I'd gone about as far as I could in Kansas City, and I was kind of bored. And so I would go to New York the way Peter Tripp suggested. And then I'd work really hard as I could for 3 months so that they'd get their money's worth, and then I'd quit and come back.
Oh, that's funny.
And so I was in New York about 2 days, and I was walking down Fifth Avenue, and I looked around, and I said, oh, yeah. And that was a New Yorker from then on.
Oh, that's really funny. Now, had you been hired as program director at WMGM?
Oh, no. I was writing public service announcements and contests.
Yeah.
Goofy stuff like that. They didn't have a clue what I was doing.
Well, typically, and it sounded it too, but now, of course, you made the jump from there to WMCA. And was MCA Top 40 when you went there?
Well, sort of. It was sort of a music station, but they weren't really Top 40. I was so frustrated at WMCM that I did make the jump. And Peter Strauss had this idea of going Top 40, and he wasn't quite sure how he wanted to do it. But he was putting together all this team and all this magical stuff, and so that's what we did.
which is amazing. Now, at this point, this is prior to December of 1960, so WABC had not made the switch yet, had they?
No,
So you were really, as far, I realize MGM and to an extent WINS, but as far as...
Yeah, Wins was creaming everybody. Yeah,
absolutely. But as far as a real stores-oriented Top 40, I guess you were the first.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now,
well,
so
I didn't know, I didn't really know that I was being a pioneer, but I guess it turned out that way.
on every level, because, back then you could look and you could find a ton of us who were copywriters.
Yep.
And that was the chick job. And, you could also find a bunch who were, quote unquote, music librarians.
Yes, of course.
Right. But to find a program director, and in the biggest market in America who's female, normally I don't even mention gender, but that's utterly astounding given the time, and I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Well, I never in all my career have I thought of myself as a woman anything.
Yeah.
Program director or executive or anything. I had to make a living, and I didn't want to be a secretary.
Right.
And so I loved radio, and I thought I knew what I was doing, and I wanted them to let me do it.
Well, and clearly, whatever it was, thank God for Peter Strauss.
Yes, Lord.
Exactly. Now, when you got there, who was on the staff at the time?
Well, let's see. There was Herb Oscar Anderson, and Barry Gray was on at night doing an interview show.
Right.
And then they were doing like hour-and-a-half kind of mixed kind of funny programming and stuff.
Yeah, the block stuff.
Yeah, but they hadn't really decided what to do Top 40-wise,
Mm-hmm.
And so after it all began to shake down, and then came along all the world's greatest disc jockeys that made me look good.
Yeah, the good guys. Now, did you coin that phrase?
No. Chuck Bloor did in FKFWB in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And except one of the guys that I had worked with in Kansas City, he was in the sales department, he was out working at KFWB.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked regularly, and he said that they had this wonderful concept, but all they used it for was a slogan, and they never did anything with it. And he said, I think you could do something with it. So I said, oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, because they were so hell-bent on color radio that they were using that
and
more.
And they had several different, slogans.
Yeah.
And so, we did that. And I really think, aside from the fact that I was blessed with some of the most talented disc jockeys in the entire world, making me look good, and the fact that it all happened together. It all just came together at the same time. But I think the only brilliant thing I ever did was that I made everybody sound like a team. I wouldn't let them fight with each other, which, as air personalities do all the time. And I wouldn't let them badmouth each other on the air. And, they had to behave as though they were a team. And I said, you don't have to like each other. You just have to pretend like you like
right.
each other.
You just have to fake it. And, you hit on the thing that all successful radio stations have, and that's they win in the halls before they win on the air.
That's right. That's right.
And that winning in the halls always permeates the air sound. And, I think that's key. Now, here you had Herb Oscar Anderson, who I assume was doing mornings.
Yes.
And now, a year or so into your format, he defects.
Well, I was, we hadn't really done that whole, we hadn't really had the format put together yet. We had Scott Muni was a very, very big influence in that because he came to work there about the same time I did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he was getting firsts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he's always been one of the nicest guys in the whole world.
Oh, yeah.
But so talented. And so he was pushing from one end, and then Herb Oscar Anderson decided that he wanted a whole bunch more money, and so they were willing to give him a whole lot of money. But he had his hymn every morning.
You're right.
And finally, they said, "No, Herb, you can't do the hymn."
Right.
And he quit over that.
Oh, that's hilarious! Now, you know, as I think about it, did he do the hymn on WABC?
I think so, yeah. I think that's how they got him, was because they said, "Oh, yeah, you can do the hymn."
Yeah, sure, bring our... Yeah, right, because after all, it was Don McNeil's Breakfast Club before him, so why not? What's
right.
A hymn? So
so then we moved Joe Bryan up into mornings, because mm-hmm. he was kind of the anchor of the whole station, because he had worked in radio for about 1 million years, and he'd done all the formats, and so he was kind of the anchor for mm-hmm. the whole thing.
And then Jack Spector after him?
No, Harry Harris.
Okay, that's right, of course.
And in fact, Harry, who is one of the most, also one of the most talented guys I've ever worked with, he just retired about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And but I hired him from Peoria.
Which is, again, a kind of a leap of faith, because back then, you know, you usually didn't go, say, Peoria, New York. You,
no.
You know, it might be Peoria, St. Louis.
When I was working in Kansas City, I had gotten a freelance job doing some commercials. And so I hired him. Well, I had actually tried to hire a guy named Johnny Dark, but he was one of those will-o'-the-wisp guys, you could never get hold of him.
Well, and every station had one, too.
That's right.
Most common radio name ever.
And he recommended his friend, Harry Harrison. So Harry came into town and cut the spots, and we became really, really good friends. And so when I had a chance to hire him in New York, why, I did.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's great. And that worked, and after Harry, let's see, was B. Mitchell Reed there, or did you hire him?
Yeah, no, I hired him, but he was the teenage idol.
Oh, yeah.
After Harry Harrison was Jack Spector.
Right.
Born
and bred New Yorker.
Oh, he sure was. And he was the Brooklyn distributor and
yeah.
all of that.
Yeah.
And then right after that was also one of the most talented guys ever to get in front of a microphone, and that's Dan Daniel.
Oh, sure. Who you know, as you know, that was my comment, was, gee, everybody's got an accent except Dan Daniels. Somebody said to me, no, Raleigh, it's the other way around.
That's right. But he's, you know, he's still one of the most talented air personalities I have ever known in my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, we had B. Mitchell Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, Mitch, what a, he was an enormous talent, but, oh, boy, what a problem in terms of, he's a doll, but he just required so much maintenance.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, actually. Yeah.
But he was just a sweetie pie. But, you know, you had to be ready for him any time of the day. And just when you get to the point where you just couldn't take any more and you wanted to go have a nice drink and have dinner someplace, the phone would ring and it would be me, Mitchell Reed, with a problem.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
But he was such a sweetie pie. And he was one of those guys that when he's working in New York, he wants to work on the West Coast. And when he's working on the West Coast, he wants to work on
yes.
the East Coast.
Yes, wherever he is where he doesn't want to be.
But
yes.
A terribly, terribly interesting, nice man.
And he could speak 4,000 words a minute.
Oh, my God, yes.
No.
In fact, when I hired him and he was just about to come to the station, and we had a lady at the station who said, you know, she just got back from vacation in L.A., and she said, oh, I heard a disc jockey out there. He was incredible. She said he talked so fast you couldn't understand a word he said, and she was going on telling me about him, and I'm smiling, and she said, you're smiling. And she said, you just hired him, didn't you? And I said, yes. And she said, well, shows you what I know.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, WMCA, the greatest station ever. Ruth Meyer, as far as I'm concerned, is a programming deity for what she was able to pull off on an independent radio station. And maybe that's the key, that it was independent against against WABC, which usually gets all the accolades. But air personality is obviously very important, and we haven't even gotten to folks like Gary Stevens yet. But also you can't deny the role of music, as well as some killer promotions. So we will continue this on the Raleigh James Show.
Oh boy, it's the Raleigh James Show.
It is the Raleigh James Show. Friday Night Trivia, those are the platters in the background from their federal days before they wound up on Mercury, let alone Music Corps. But we're talking to Ruth Meyer. And as far as I'm concerned, I'll say hands down, I put WMCA in its heyday under Ruth as the best top 40 station in America. And here are these good guy sweatshirts, which, by the way, I did a search during the break, Ruth. And there's somebody who's bootlegging them now, but really doesn't have the color exactly right or the head exactly positioned right. And the call letters aren't exact, you know? Because, of course, nothing will do but the best. But so now I'm still to learn this. So management doesn't want you to order them. You've ordered them. You have no idea, but 9,832 large sweatshirts show up. So now Spector's going to go give them away.
Well, I told Jack to take them over to Rockefeller Center, and we announced on the air that the first 25 people that asked him if he was a WMCA good guy would get a sweatshirt.
Oh, no.
Well, my God, he was mobbed, and people were coming out of office buildings, and I mean, it was unbelievable. So finally, he showed up at the station. He was about to be attacked. And he said, "You're going to give them." All these people were following, and he was like a Pied Piper.
Oh, no.
And he said, "You got to give them sweatshirts." He said, "They're going to kill me." And all these people were milling around the lobby. So we're giving out sweatshirts like crazy. And the manager of the station came in, and he said, and I expected him to punch out my lights. You know?
Right.
And so he said, he just gave me this horrible look like he was going to kill me. And he said, "Don't I get a WMCA good guy sweatshirt?"
Oh, man.
And being a smart-ass kid that I was in those days, I said, "No, because you're not a good guy."
Oh, no.
He said, "Come on, give me a sweatshirt. You're making me look bad."
Oh, that's really
so
funny.
So we never discussed it after that.
Now, what year was that? Do you remember?
I think it was like 64, maybe.
Okay, and you gave them away for what, about 4 years?
For years and years and years, yeah.
Because, as I say, to this day, they are the collector's item. But, you know, you find pictures where John Lennon's wearing his good guy sweatshirt, or say, on that Herman's Hermit album. So was that coincidence, or how the hell did you pull that off?
It was coincidence.
Oh, man.
Because, everybody wanted sweatshirts.
Right.
And it's like really cool because people didn't have things like that in those days. And, of course, again, I couldn't design sweatshirts or anything because I wasn't allowed to have any in the first place. So we had an advertising agency who had made little bookend kind of things with two little faces. One had a smile and one had a frown, and it was the frown was for the people who didn't listen to the station, and the smile was for the people who did. And so I took that face because I had to have something on it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the whole thing was just, like an accident.
Well, and that's usually the best way, of course, because it probably of all giveaways is the signature giveaway.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing.
We really kept control of it, too. I mean, we made sure it was good quality.
They were. Now, did you pick the color?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Everybody fought me about that, too, but that happens to be my favorite color.
Well, it's a nice, even on the knockoffs that you see, wherever you got that color, it's apparently not that easy to obtain.
No, it isn't.
which is just great.
Most of them have too much orange in them.
Right. Or they're just too bright. They weren't washed out, but there was just a certain subtleness to them.
Yeah, perfect color.
Yeah, it was. And I can't believe you don't have these.
Isn't that dumb?
Now, of course, the other thing, the promotions, and the one that will live on in everybody's mind was, of course, your beach party.
Oh, God, yes. That was fun.
And the best part about the beach party, which of course was clues that you gave out, was that if you screwed up and went to the wrong beach, at least
it was a picnic.
Okay. Yeah. And in some cases, you even at the wrong beach supplied picnic supplies.
Oh yeah, because we didn't want everybody to be all bent out of shape because they couldn't find our secret location, and so. So we had we put our sales department there, and they were giving out, you know, stuff. But it was very difficult to get to the site because I had to have all the guys come someplace that nobody would be able to follow us.
Right.
And we had to sneak out in a funny car and things so that people couldn't follow us because everybody was trying to find out how to get there.
Right. Now, how many days were you given the clues?
Let's see. I think we started the afternoon of the day before.
Okay. And it was like a clue every hour?
Well, we increased it as we got closer to the time.
How many people found it?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was something like, I don't know. But it was in the hundreds of thousands.
That's what I understand. It was the population of a medium-sized city.
Oh, yeah, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And everybody was so nice.
Which is alarming.
Well, we always made our people be nice.
Yeah.
And it was very funny because we would always tell people, I don't know how I did that. I must have been a control freak.
It worked.
But I would tell people, if they start getting boisterous or rude or difficult or something, I would say, okay, now, if you don't behave yourself, we're not going to let you listen to the station anymore.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's wonderful.
And they'd say, oh, okay.
Oh, that's classic. Now, then, of course, so you've got the greatest disc jockeys. You've got wonderful promotions, great giveaways, but still, nothing is anything if it isn't for the music.
Absolutely.
Before
you get away, I got to tell you about one of the disc jockeys that got away was Dan Ingram.
Really?
Yeah, because I had him all hired, and then somebody turned him off, and he went to work for WABC, and I've always mourned losing him.
Oh, yeah.
But we stayed good friends. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, that's fine. He was wonderfully acerbic. Now, when you were trying to hire him, was he already working for Mars Productions?
No, he was in St. Louis.
WIL?
He was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
No, wait, I'm sorry, not St. Louis.
Yeah, he was, WIL.
Yeah, but he wasn't.
Or had he already been in Connecticut by then?
No, he had gone to New Orleans or someplace
okay.
in the South. Dallas, I think.
All right, sounds good. Now, music. And this is a tough one. And, you know, I've often said that when the urban craze came, I said, forget this. The first urban programmer was Ruth because she understood what records to play for the five boroughs.
Yes.
And obviously, you had people who were named music director, like Gary Stevens or whatever.
No, but Gary Stevens wasn't there. We had Joe Bogart and Frank Costa.
Oh, really?
Music guys, yeah.
Okay, because I always wondered how Gary wound up with all those TVs at home and stuff. I figured he had to have been music director.
We will draw a veil over that.
Yeah, I didn't say that. Who said that? But yeah, I mean, carrying them down the stairs. No, no one saw that. But in terms of really picking it, obviously, control freak or not, this was your doing. How did you make the determinations?
Well, we would have a music meeting every week, and Joe Bogart, who was a dynamite music director, and he used to play in Les Brown's band. He was a musician. And so he and Frank Costa would bring the records in, and I needed to give a buffer so that we weren't accused of payola or anything.
Yeah.
And so I knew that if anybody was going to get nailed for payola, it was going to be me, and I knew I wasn't taking payola. So everything was cool. And so we would, all the guys would go to the music meeting every Tuesday, and we'd have sandwiches in, and we'd play all the records, and we'd vote on them.
Mm.
But they couldn't swing it because they would, you know, they had pals and stuff, and they would all vote for a record. I'd say, well, we're going to wait till next week, and they go, oh, it's soon.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, and clearly, though, you know, title for title, obviously WMCA was on it. But, of course, we're talking a lot of years with a lot of musical changes, because when you first came on, Top 40 was still really almost in its infancy and exciting and all that. And then kind of the pablum period, and then here come the Beatles, which really in some ways forever changed change the sound.
Well, they saved radio, I'll tell you.
Yeah, in some ways they did, but wasn't it interesting to watch individual stations' reactions? Because
yes.
In those who completely underestimated it, like a KFWB, really lost out.
Yeah.
But here come the Beatles, and this is such a different sound for you. Did you recognize that instantly to say, hey, we're on to something?
Well, we had tried to play a Beatle record before they broke,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't get arrested with it.
You know, it's funny, because I know Murray the K at one point in 62 had one of those platter polls where he played a Beatles record against Lover's Island, the Blue Jays, Coney Island Baby or something,
yeah,
and or whatever, Lover's Island, and no one would vote for the Beatles.
That's right. It just, they wouldn't take off. But one of the best stories, speaking of Murray the K, you know, he had the Beatles, he was interviewing them when
yeah.
they got off the plane and all of that.
Yeah.
And we didn't have the facilities to send somebody, can you believe this, to send somebody to the airport or anything.
Oh no.
And so Jack Spector again came into my office and he said, oh, God, he said, they're killing us. They're killing us. Wind's just killing us. So I said, okay, go on the air and tell everybody that we're going to have a Beatle first.
Oh.
And he said, where are you going to get a Beatle first? And I said, never mind. Just go in there.
Oh,
so I went in the music library. And, you know, the British records, the London records,
sure.
They had different songs on them sometimes than the American releases.
Right.
And so I dug out one of those. And I don't know whether it was Please Please Me or one of the Beatle things that was not on the American release.
Right.
And so we started playing it. And we're saying, it's the Beatle first, it's the Beatle first. We made ABC crazy, of course.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, you think about it, because, of course, they had tried to release things on Swan and on VJ and Tolly and all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, coming up with the old stuff and claiming it's a Beatles first, and I'm sure that Rick Sklar was completely unhip to this and probably going insane in terms of what are these records.
He had it in his own record library.
But,
he just didn't know it.
Right, that's my point. He just didn't know it. Oh, that's classic. And
it's what made radio fun. You know?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, of course, is that radio, for the most part back then, was relatively worthless.
Yeah.
These are small-time businessmen who are limited to what they can own, and that limited the prices. So there wasn't like today where you're talking about putting $100 million on the line.
Yeah.
Which
Well, you know, see, ABC, we had an advantage. ABC had an advantage because every time it came to be summertime, everybody would go on vacation, and all they could hear was ABC because
right.
we didn't have the signal. So we had to win them all back again in the fall.
Right.
But we had an advantage in that we could move on things and do things, and that was a network. And Rick had to get permission, and he had to convince people to let him do things and all that.
Yeah.
And then he made the mistake of being the one guy in charge in terms of he wanted all the credit for everything.
Right.
And so he wouldn't use the talents of the guys to help him make the radio station.
Exactly.
And then we'd have these personal appearances, and the guys would all come in by themselves except our guys. We had special outfits that they all wore,
right.
and we all went to all the parties and things together.
As a group.
And we
right.
would walk in and we'd just wipe everybody out.
Which is sheer brilliance as far as that goes. It's a small thing, but it makes such a difference, whether you're appearing at the high school pep rally
yeah.
or the dance or what have you. Now, when did you leave WMCA?
Oh, let's see. That was in...
I was thinking about 68.
That sounds about right. Let me think now.
All right, I'm going to let you think about that, and we will come back and find out more about the good guys truly talk about making something from nothing. An incredible story of, you know, you talk about against all odds, independent ownership, not a real budget, no great signal, and clearly the best-sounding top 40 station. And, you know, as I'm saying this, I had asked Ruth at the beginning why that was the case, and I think at least from my ears, not only in remembering but as we're talking, it's because of that winning in the halls. It's because of that camaraderie. It's because of them wanting to make you feel a part of what they were doing. And maybe that's not so difficult after all, but it seems to be brain surgery for everybody else, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
It is the Raleigh James Show. Friday Night Music Trivia. And I'm talking to Ruth Meyer, who, as far as I'm concerned, puts us all in the dust when it comes to putting together the greatest top 40 station ever. Now, in part, it's a great staff, and in part, it's the times. You can't forget that. But overall, it just doesn't work if the person at the helm isn't the right person in doing it. So here we are after about, 8 or 9 years, and and I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard a rumor that you had one down book and they fired you.
No, it wasn't the down book. It was that they had the change management, and the guy that came in had been jealous of the good guys all the time, and so he was going to wipe people out and then make them make a new radio station on his own. And of course, it didn't work
at all.
Yeah,
at all.
While I'm thinking about it, let me tell you that one of our big advantages was that we had two. They weren't relief guys; they were our weekend guys, Ed Baer and Frank Stickle, and they did the weekends. So that when a guy would go on vacation, they would fill in for him.
Right.
So everybody in the audience was very comfortable with him, and it was, you know, we didn't have strangers on the air.
Right, and I think, again, that whole family thing permeating it, no matter when somebody appeared, they were part of it.
And we also, people don't know this, but I gave Robin Leach his first job.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
What was he?
Well, he had just come over from London. He never tells anybody about that, but he's a good friend of mine anyway. But he did a thing called Go Magazine.
Yeah, I remember it well.
All right.
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah, it was his. He came in and pitched me, and we did it, and it really worked.
Yes, Go, and in every market, a different station would sign up with this, and it did work very well.
He was brilliant. It was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there was a competitor, too, to this later, and I don't remember if it was Beat or whatever, but Go was the big one and the first one, and it did very well.
It sure did.
You know, until you mentioned that, I'd forgotten about Go, but yes. And, of course, even the fanzines at the time, I'm sure you were friendly with Gloria Stavers at 16. And things like Tiger Beat and the things that just sort of perpetuated it. Now, in these years, was there any time you goofed and brought somebody on the air and said, this isn't going to work, they're out of here?
No.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Because when you think about it, almost everybody has the story where they've heard somebody and they hire them and they get them on the air and they say, this is a disaster.
Well, you know what I think happened? We had such a strong team, and we made them be a team, that when we brought somebody in, they were just kind of absorbed into the team.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't out there all by themselves, swimming by themselves, you know?
Right. Right. Now, when you would hire somebody, did you go hear them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you didn't just rely on whatever they sent you.
Oh, no.
All right, because I know...
Because, you know, my feeling is when they send you a tape, that's the best they're ever going to sound. And then when you bring them in for an audition, that's the worst they're ever going to sound. So somewhere in the middle is the real person.
Now, looking back on it, everybody in any job has anecdotes. But as you look back at it, what is the funniest thing that ever happened on the air at that radio station? Maybe unintentionally.
Oh, geez, I don't know. Everything was
funny. Well, you know, yeah, but you know.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I get back to Jack Spector again. Because everybody knew that he was Jewish. And so came the Jewish holidays, and we were trying to make him take the day off.
The tape, oh gosh, yes.
And he wouldn't take the day off.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I don't practice, and so I'm not going to force him to practice his religion in public, you know. So I left him on the air, and we got these phone calls. So Jack took one of the phone calls, and this lady said, what are you doing on the air? Don't you know you're not supposed to be on the air? This is a Jewish holiday. And he said, I'm not on the air, I'm on tape.
Right.
And she said, oh, okay.
Right, right, exactly. Thank you, goodbye. Yeah, that was classic. I do remember that story, and that's so funny because it made all the great radio stories. But it was a phenomenal period of time, but again, spanning many periods of time because the sound when you came in versus the sound when you went out was so vastly different, yet you were able to continue to be hip. Even by this time, I guess Scott Muni is already on FM.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's gone through WABC, passed it, gone by, and you are still doing it. So after WMCA, what'd you go do?
Well, after WMCA, I had a lot of fun. I consulted some radio stations. I consulted four radio stations in Australia, and one in Luxembourg, and one in Monte Carlo, and one wow. in the Netherlands, and then Radio Caroline was cooking then, so I...
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Well, maybe that's why I liked them. All right, well, that would explain it.
Actually, it was just an excuse to go on all these trips.
Which is perfect. Who cares?
That's right.
But I know, and then back at HN, and now it's 360, you're back in Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
You're sounding thrilled about it. Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you, I don't think a Radio Hall of Fame would be complete without you being near the top of the list, if not on
sweet.
The top of the list. And I don't know if there ever will be or if there is a Radio Hall of Fame, but I vote in advance for you.
You're going to have to vote an awful lot of times, I'm afraid.
Well, no. Now, that you see, Ruth, that's the funny thing. Virtually everybody I know who was any type of a radio freak, when it comes down to it, your name comes and everybody is just immediately reverent.
Isn't that weird?
There's not even a... Well, no, it's not. It's deserved. It's just... You earned it.
Well, actually, no. They all made me look good. I'm not just digging my bare toe in the dust and saying, oh, shucks here. I mean, really, they made me look good.
Well, I'll tell you, I still say that it's the person at the top. You couldn't have brought them together. You know disc jockeys, you know radio stations,
yeah.
You know. I mean, just even think of BMR. No, you have to learn to manage and handle these people.
Oh, yeah.
And you certainly did, and I can't believe the hour's gone by, but I hope we can do it again sometime.
Oh, yeah, you want to do it tomorrow?
Well, real soon, I guarantee you, we've gotten a lot of emails, so I'll distill the questions, and we'll do it again soon.
Okay, thanks
All right.
a lot.
You, Thank you, you Ruth.
Brought me a whole good day.
Oh, and you brought me one, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Ruth Meyer, WMCA, back in the day. Really, the absolute best top 40 programmer, bar none. Yeah, there were people before her, and there have been tons of people after her. But, well, to be honest, last night I took the night off because we had to go to a radio station event. Well, it wasn't a station event. It was an industry event. And I'll tell you, John and I walked out of there and both had the same impression. It isn't the same business. There were no Ruth Meyers to be had. There weren't even Ruth Meyer wannabes to be had. Distressing all the way around. But I thank Ruth for giving us an hour of her time. We will do it again. We'll be back to trivia next hour right here on the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show.